Welcome to Psychology Unlocked, the podcast that turns your GCSE psychology revision into something you'll actually remember. I'm your host, and today we're diving into one of the most fascinating topics on the OCR specification, theories of dreaming. Whether you've been puzzling over Freud's ideas about the unconscious mind or trying to get your head around what the pons actually does during REM sleep, this episode has you covered. Grab a pen, because by the end of this, you'll be ready to tackle any question the examiners throw at you. So, why do we dream? Humans have been asking this question for thousands of years, but it wasn't until 1900 that the first major scientific theory arrived, courtesy of Sigmund Freud. And then nearly 80 years later, in 1977, two neuroscientists called Hobson and McCarley completely turned Freud's ideas on their head with a biological explanation. These two theories sit at the heart of this topic, and understanding both and being able to evaluate them is exactly what will earn you marks in the exam.
Let's start with Freud. Sigmund Freud published his theory in a book called The Interpretation of Dreams in 1900. Freud was a psychodynamic psychologist, which means he believed that our behavior, including our dreams, is driven by unconscious forces, particularly repressed desires and wishes that we can't consciously acknowledge. Here's the core idea. Freud argued that dreams are a form of wish fulfillment. While we sleep, the unconscious mind relaxes its guard and repressed wishes, things we want but can't admit to ourselves, bubble up to the surface in the form of dreams. But here's the clever part. The mind doesn't just let these raw, disturbing desires appear directly. Instead, it disguises them. This is where two of the most important terms in this topic come in: manifest content and latent content. The manifest content is what the dream actually looks like, the story you experience while you're asleep. You might dream about flying or being chased or sitting an exam you haven't revised for. That's the manifest content, the surface-level narrative. The latent content, on the other hand, is the hidden meaning underneath. It's the repressed wish or desire that the dream is really expressing. So if you dream about flying, the latent content might represent a wish for freedom or escape from a stressful situation. The process by which the latent content is transformed into the manifest content is called dream work. Freud identified several mechanisms involved in dream work. The most important ones for your exam are condensation, where several ideas are merged into one image, displacement, where emotions are transferred from their real target to something less threatening, and symbolism, where objects in the dream represent something else entirely. Now, the really important thing to understand about Freud's theory is that it is a psychological explanation. Dreams, for Freud, have meaning. They are the brain's way of processing and disguising unconscious desires. This is fundamentally different from what Hobson and McCarley proposed. Let's move on to Hobson and McCarley's activation synthesis theory, published in 1977. These two researchers were neuroscientists. They were interested in the biology of the brain, not in unconscious desires. And their theory is a biological explanation of dreaming. Here's the key idea. During REM sleep, that's rapid eye movement sleep, the stage of sleep most associated with vivid dreaming, a structure at the base of the brainstem called the pons begins firing random electrical signals. These signals are not organized or meaningful. They are essentially random neuronal noise. This is the activation part of the theory. Now, the brain doesn't just sit there passively receiving these random signals. The cerebral cortex, the large, wrinkled outer layer of the brain responsible for thinking, perception, and consciousness, receives these signals and tries to make sense of them. It attempts to construct a coherent narrative from what is essentially random input. This is the synthesis part. The result of this synthesis process is what we experience as a dream. So according to Hobson and McCarley, dreams don't have a hidden meaning. The origin of the dream is random neuronal firing. However, and this is a really important point that many candidates get wrong, Hobson and McCarley do not say that dreams are completely meaningless. What they say is that the origin is random, but the way your particular cortex synthesizes those signals will be shaped by your memories, your personality, and your experiences. So the content of your dream reflects you, even if the trigger was random. One more key term you need for this theory: sensory blockade. During REM sleep, the brain actively blocks external sensory information from reaching consciousness. This is why you don't wake up every time there's a noise in the room. Your brain is filtering it out so that sleep can continue. This also explains why dreams can feel so vivid and real. Without competing external sensory input, the internally generated signals dominate your experience. Now let's talk about how to evaluate these two theories, because evaluation is worth 30% of your marks in OCR psychology, and examiners are looking for specific, well-developed points, starting with Freud. One major strength is that the theory has had enormous cultural and clinical influence. The idea that dreams reflect unconscious desires led to the development of psychoanalysis as a therapeutic technique. However, the most important criticism of Freud's theory is its lack of scientific falsifiability. Freud's interpretations of dream content are subjective. There's no objective way to test whether a dream about a key really does represent repressed sexual desire. The theory cannot be falsified, which means it doesn't meet the standards of scientific rigor. Examiners will credit you for using the word falsifiability here. For activation synthesis, a key strength is that it is scientifically testable and supported by objective evidence. Brain scanning technology allows researchers to observe the pons activating during REM sleep, and the pattern of neural activity can be measured objectively. This gives the theory much stronger scientific credibility than Freud's. However, there is important counter-evidence. A researcher called Mark Solms conducted studies in the 1990s on patients who had suffered damage to the forebrain, specifically to areas associated with motivation and desire. He found that these patients stopped dreaming entirely, even though their pons was still functioning normally. This suggests that the forebrain, the area associated with wishes and desires, which is more in line with Freud's thinking, plays a crucial role in dreaming. This challenges the idea that the pons alone is sufficient to produce dreams, and it provides indirect support for Freud's emphasis on the role of wishes and desires. Now, some rapid-fire exam tips before we move to the quiz. Tip 1. Always use the terms manifest content and latent content when describing Freud's theory. Candidates who describe the theory without these terms are capped at lower mark bands. Tip 2. Don't say activation synthesis claims dreams have no meaning. The correct statement is that the origin of dreams is random neuronal firing, but the synthesis process is shaped by individual experience. This is a very common mistake that costs marks. Tip 3. For 9-mark questions, you need a balanced structure. Spend roughly 3 marks worth of content on AO1 that's describing the theory accurately, and then at least 2 distinct evaluation points for AO3. Each evaluation point should be developed, make the point, explain it, and ideally link it to evidence. Tip 4. When applying theories to scenarios, that's AO2, you must explicitly map the scenario details to the theory. Don't just say, "This could be explained by Freud." Say something like, "The monster in the dream represents the latent content, specifically the dreamer's repressed fear of failure, which has been displaced onto a threatening figure through the process of dream work." Tip 5. Use the phrase sensory blockade when explaining why external stimuli don't disrupt dreaming. Examiners will credit this specific terminology. Now, quick fire recall quiz. I'll ask the question, pause the podcast, and try to answer before I give you the answer. Question 1. What is the difference between manifest content and latent content? Pause now. The manifest content is what the dreamer actually experiences, the surface narrative of the dream. The latent content is the hidden, unconscious meaning beneath the surface. Question 2. Which brain structure is responsible for the activation stage in Hobson and McCarley's theory? Pause now. The pons, a structure in the brainstem. Question 3. What does the cerebral cortex do during dreaming according to activation synthesis? Pause now. It synthesizes, or makes sense of, the random signals sent up from the pons, constructing a coherent narrative. Question 4. Who challenged Hobson and McCarley's theory, and what did they find? Pause now. Mark Solms found that patients with forebrain damage stopped dreaming even when the pons was intact, suggesting the forebrain plays a necessary role in dreaming. Question 5. What is the main scientific criticism of Freud's theory? Pause now. It lacks falsifiability. The interpretations are subjective and cannot be objectively tested or disproved. So let's wrap up. Today you've covered 2 major theories of dreaming. Freud's wish fulfillment theory from 1900, which argues that dreams express repressed unconscious desires through manifest and latent content, and Hobson and McCarley's activation synthesis theory from 1977, which proposes that dreams result from the cerebral cortex synthesizing random neuronal signals fired by the pons during REM sleep. You've learned the key evaluation points for both theories, including Solms' research as counter-evidence to activation synthesis, and you've practiced applying the theories using specific terminology. Remember, In the exam, precision of language earns marks. Use the correct terms, structure your answers clearly, and always link your evaluation points to evidence. Good luck with your revision. You've got this. See you in the next episode of Psychology Unlocked.